This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment, a company dedicated to socially responsible investing and shareholder advocacy. Bruce and Larry were most recently guests on the sustainability segment in June of 2011 and told us about recent successes of shareholder advocacy in creating positive change in publicly traded corporations. Bruce Herbert and Larry Doors are here today to give us an update on progress made since then and to evaluate the accomplishments of shareholder advocacy in this year's 2012 proxy season. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. It's good to be back, and happy 10th anniversary. I believe this is the 10th time we've done this show together.
Would you begin by defining socially responsible investing?
Certainly. The social investment movement often uses an analogy of the three-legged stool. And one of the legs of the three-legged stool is screening or avoiding companies that are doing things that the investor doesn't like. The second leg is community investment or microcredit lending, which really brings necessary banking services and capital access to areas or people traditionally underserved, if not outright excluded. And the third leg of the three-legged stool is shareholder advocacy or shareholder engagement. And that's using your rights as shareholders to actively engage companies in transforming their practices and really changing how they are addressing their operations.
How widespread is socially responsible investing at present?
Well, it's really quite widespread. There's a trends report that's done every 2 years, and the most recent trends report shows that $3.07 trillion is invested socially with some form of social screen or activity applied, and that makes it 1 in 8 invested dollars.
And it is a fact that social investing is growing much more quickly than any other part of the investment realm.
Would you say more about the role that shareholder advocacy plays in socially responsible investing?
Sure. It's the third leg of the stool, and we often use the analogy, the familiar environmental axiom, reduce, reuse, recycle, where recycling is a very good activity. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient to really meet larger goals. And so in reality, they form more of a hierarchy where reducing and reusing are much more beneficial and much more impactful. In a similar way, the three items of the social investment stool, screening, community investment, and shareholder advocacy, also form a hierarchy. Screening is necessary, and it's really valuable for a variety of reasons. And at the same time, it's not sufficient in order to reach the larger, more important goals of sustainability. And so the shareholder activism is trying to transform these corporate behaviors rather than just selling a company. If you think about it, companies would really like nothing more than if everyone who questioned their activity and behavior, if they sold the shares and never darkened the doorway again. Well, this socially concerned and impact-oriented investor really makes a point of using their rights to actually go to those doorways, knock on them, have them open, and have these conversations so as to change the outcomes.
Who participates in shareholder advocacy?
Well, a whole array of individuals and institutions. Historically, it started with the churches back in the 1920s, who decided to screen out the so-called sin stocks, alcohol, tobacco, and gambling. And it's grown significantly from there. And institutions still play the major role. But one of the exciting developments that we've seen is individuals coming into the picture. And really, technology is helping that in a big way. There are different organizations out there. We really want to highlight our friends at MoxieVote, who allow individuals to understand and track what other larger organizations like Newground, like some of the major SRI mutual funds and so forth, SRI being socially responsible investment, and you know, using technology allows people to kind of open the door in ways that they hadn't before.
To what extent has who is involved in shareholder advocacy changed over time?
I would say it's mainly that transition from institutions only, primarily, to individuals. And the individuals are assisted by technology, as I mentioned. And one of the programs that we've been working on, we call the Shareholder Genome Project. And it is using the evolved technology of social media to really provide a resource and a network for individuals to utilize these tools. Because what's happened up until now is the logistical threshold for participation is really quite low. One need own only $2,000 worth of company stock and have held those $2,000 worth for a year. So that's pretty low. as a threshold, but the actual threshold is quite high because of the way companies respond. When an individual shows up and files a shareholder proposal for consideration, they usually get snowed under by the legal department or an outside legal counsel, and they get a one-inch thick dossier of legal mumbo-jumbo that challenges the validity of their submission before the Securities and Exchange Commission. Well, we have great success in defending those before the SEC. I'll knock on wood, in 19 years we've never lost before the SEC. Newground hasn't. And so we can resource these kinds of responses and these kinds of ways for individuals to respond to companies. And that's what the Shareholder Genome Project is really all about.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but would you review the steps that result in a shareholder proposal being placed on the ballot at an annual meeting?
Sure. Well, it's promulgated under the rules of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the requirements are quite simple. It's $2,000 worth of stock, and that's dollars, not shares, held for a year by the time of the filing deadline. There are a few other requirements. I mean, it has to be a topic that's germane to shareholders at large, not just something that's individually beneficial, and a few other general requirements. But by and large, that's the major thing. The interesting thing is that the process, sometimes we file a shareholder proposal and then, along with that, invite the company to dialogue about the topic. Other times we might initiate a dialogue first, and then if the dialogue isn't progressing in as substantive a way as we desire, then we file a shareholder proposal. Over the years, we've done it both ways, and more or less these days, we tend to file first and then invite conversation at the same time, just because it creates skin in the game, where the company now has a reason to respond and take the topic seriously.
And it's interesting, you know, some of our great successes as shareholder advocates have come when we've filed on behalf of a very small holding of shares. It could be $2,000, $3,000 worth. This year, we also filed at Nike on behalf of the North Carolina State Treasurer's Office on behalf of $50 million worth of shares. I was down at Chevron, and a colleague working on behalf of the New York State Pension Fund was filing on behalf of $775 million worth of Chevron stock. And yet, you can accomplish as much with a very small holding as you can with a very large one. So I think that what Bruce is saying is that the door is really open for individuals to become more active participants, and the possibility is there for great effectiveness.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2012 proxy season. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What have been the most prominent topics for shareholder advocacy during the 2012 proxy season?
Well, we would say two areas in particular. One is related to the disclosure of political activity and involvement by companies. And we've been doing that for many years, but in particular, the importance has arisen since the, in our view, disastrous Citizens United decision. And the second is the area of fracking and the disclosure of all the risks associated with fracking, which is now such a widespread practice.
Yeah, so this year on political activity, there were nearly 100 resolutions filed at different companies. And as the resolutions are filed, some companies agree. For instance, Halliburton has now agreed to disclose its political spending. Which
unbelievable.
Is
Halliburton?
It really is true. And yet you have companies where we have filed and where we've participated in dialogue, including Amazon.com, Nike, Boeing, that still refuse to engage in the kind of disclosure that I think citizens want to see. If you're going to participate in the political process, you should do so in a transparent manner. And that's something that is very, very widely supported by citizens and by shareholders.
Well, and you also see a financial liability. Boeing, for instance, has been blocked out of the ability to bid on contracts, you know, because of some of its corporate malfeasance in the political realm. And so it has a direct shareholder impact, but it's also important to the citizenry. It's important to this experiment we call democracy, which is really fundamental to capitalism as a whole.
And just in the last week, the insurance company Aetna, by mistake, released some data that showed that it made $7 million of contributions to two organizations, one to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and the other to a group called American Action Network that has on its board a number of very conservative Republican activists. And we're talking one company, $7 million. There could be more out there, but they didn't disclose that by mistake. And it gives you an idea, if every S&P 500 company were participating in this way, it's an enormous, an extraordinary amount of money. And if they had not made this error and disclosed this information, we wouldn't know about it. Then they've come out and said, oh, it's for educational purposes only. And if you believe that, you know, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you because, for instance, the American Action Network does nothing but political advertising. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce spends tens of millions of dollars in political influence. This is not education. This is politics. There are a couple other aspects. The one that we've been working on is the one that Bruce and I were just talking about, which is simply transparency of activity and giving to groups like the Chamber of Commerce. They don't have to disclose their donors. And again, we're talking tens of millions of dollars, at least. It might even be in the hundreds of millions this year. But also, there have been efforts around transparency of lobbying activity. That's something new in this same field. And this year, there were three proposals where shareholders said to companies, let's not do any political spending at all. And in particular, those were at Target, 3M, and Bank of America. And at those companies, the companies had already gotten in trouble from making some donations that offended much of their customer base, you know. And so you can see that there is a downside liability for shareholders. And so it was very interesting. And at Target, for instance, 25.4% of shareholders did not support management's recommendation against that proposal. So a very significant number of people even supporting a ban within the company, you know, let's have a company policy not to engage in politics at all. So that's a big change and something exciting happening. And then the other is people may have heard of the American Legislative Exchange Council, known by its acronym ALEC, who gave us the Stand Your Ground laws, among other things. And a number of companies have withdrawn from that, and it relies on corporate support. But, you know, unless you're a gun manufacturer, it's pretty hard to understand how business is benefited by these crazy Stand Your Ground laws that we've really learned of since the Trayvon Martin shooting. So when we were at the Amazon.com meeting this year, we were happy when they announced that they would no longer participate. It was about a week and a half ago that Walmart announced that they would no longer participate with ALEC. And a couple dozen companies have made that step. And it's very powerful because people are becoming aware of how companies are participating in politics. And they respond and say to companies, you know, I'm offended by this and I don't want to do business with you under those circumstances. It's a very powerful tool.
And locally, the Gates Foundation also withdrew from ALEC, and we're very proud of Amazon for its role. We actually have been talking to them for 2 years about disclosure and about the accountability in this realm, and they've been resistant. And at the same time, the negative profile of ALEC has arisen to the point where I think that our conversation sensitized them to see the train coming down the track, and so they did withdraw. We're very pleased about that.
And then there's one other aspect on the political field, and that is, well, Newground was part of a group of investors who filed a brief on behalf of defending a Montana state law. It was a 100-year-old law passed in 1912 that said corporations are not allowed to participate in state politics. And they passed that because the mining barons had absolutely bought the political system, and the people got together and said, we don't want our politics that way, and they passed the law. Well, you know, some conservative political activists along the lines of the Citizens United folks sued in Montana. We filed a brief in support of Montana, which did defend its law, the state government did, and they were very successful, and the state Supreme Court in Montana overwhelmingly supported the citizens' right to keep corporations out of state politics. Well, of course, that is going to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so, you know, this is the first opportunity for the Supreme Court to revisit the Citizens United case. It'll be very interesting to see how they respond to it, because if you read the judgment in the Citizens United case, it really assumes that there is transparency in the system. And what people see actually happening now is a complete lack of transparency, again, with millions of dollars sloshing in all directions. So hopefully, social investors banding together can have a role in changing that decision from Citizens United.
How have protests at some of the shareholder meetings this year affected the environment for shareholder advocacy?
Protests we generally think of as a good thing. because it raises people's awareness, causes focus to happen. Now, protests, of course, can happen in a variety of different ways. And at the Amazon annual meeting, for instance, there were a number of protests outside the meeting as well as inside. And the people inside were legitimate shareholders. They had a right to be there. And several times there were the starts of disruptions and conversations that were started, questions that wanted to be asked. And the protesters were very respectful in the sense that they would perhaps cause a disturbance, but then when asked to sit down or to leave or what have you, you know, they did. So no one, you know, was arrested, no one was dragged out by their hair or anything like that. But what it did do is it raised the heat, and it just created a real attention and focus on the topics, I think, by management and the board, because people were so effective in describing how important these topics were. Now, at earlier meetings, like at Wells Fargo, there were protests, and there was actually an attempt to kind of shut the meeting down, and all of that was interesting. But when the time came for the Q&A period, not one single question was asked.
Which is such a lost opportunity. Imagine the opportunity to stand up to the CEO and say, how many of our customers, how many people who chose to come and do business with Wells Fargo, have we screwed over in our mortgage process, right, with the robo-signing and all that? Tell me how many of our customers have we alienated for life, and tell me that that makes good business sense. What an opportunity to ask a simple question like that. And, you know, there is a number of how many of their own customers they've screwed. So it's a completely legitimate question, and the opportunity was left on the table. So I think that the groups organizing between that was the first one and the Amazon one that was very much more recently really are understanding how to utilize the actions of demonstrators within these meetings. And so I hope as we go forward that we see things move on that path.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2012 proxy season. Have there been any new trends of note in shareholder advocacy during 2012?
Well, I think, you know, most of all, people are realizing that shareholders have rights and have influence and have power, and people are beginning to reach out to grab that tool that exists. So I think that that's a real sea change, and I really look forward to seeing that grow as we go forward. It's also really interesting because there's now a greater recognition that you don't need 50.1% of the vote to have an influence. And there are some companies, you know, Walmart or Berkshire Hathaway, where the top executives and members of the board own 40%, 50% or more of the company. You're never going to get a majority vote there. But you can still be highly influential by getting a substantial vote, by showing substantial support. And analysts looking, for instance, at say-on-pay votes suggest that any time more than 30% of the shareholders at a company reject the pay package for the top executives, that company has a real problem, and that board of directors needs to address that problem. So that's also progress, because there's a greater understanding that this is not simply a pass-fail type of a test. This is an engagement and an opportunity to show the feelings of a substantial number of shareholders, and a substantial number is enough to cause change at a company.
During 2012, what progress has been made by shareholder advocates in improving corporate governance and holding corporations accountable?
Well, we've mentioned some of the items, but one thing that we haven't talked about is a majority vote at Nabors Industries on proxy access. And this has been a developing trend, and where companies are being asked to allow shareholders to elect or nominate, rather, directors. And there are different proposals that have been put forward as to the thresholds and the requirements. And one was voted on at Nabors Industries, and it's the first time ever that it broke through and received a majority vote of 56%. Interestingly, that was put forward by five state retirement systems, including the state of North Carolina, who has engaged Newground to help them in their first ever. These are some of their first ever shareholder proposals. And so we're very pleased to be helping them in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly have been a number of other points in terms of corporate governance. One of the things that investors want to see is a separation between the CEO and the chairman of the board of directors, because the board of directors' job is to hire and fire the CEO and to monitor his or her performance. And so to have one person filling both those roles, you know, obviously means that oversight can be lacking. And in 2000, 1% of U.S. S&P 500 companies had a separate CEO and board chair. And now we have 22%. And so that's a very substantial growth. And this is something that shareholders feel strongly about. When there is a shareholder resolution on the ballot, it tends to get very high support. And companies are really taking notice. And this is really important in terms of accountability for shareholders, that we separate those functions, because the board's job is to represent shareholders and to monitor and oversee the activities of the CEO.
Larry earlier mentioned the say-on-pay votes. And what's happening is there are now very targeted efforts on particularly egregious examples. But about 20 companies saw lower than 50% support for their management-recommended pay packages. And Chesapeake Energy, with that disastrous and scoundrel CEO, Aubrey McClendon, only 20% of shareholders voted to approve the pay package there. 20%, so that means 80% voted against it. This is not a vote of confidence in management. And two board members, there are only two board members that came up for re-election this cycle, and they were both voted down, and they resigned. So these are some of the more interesting things that have been happening this year.
Which human rights issues have been addressed by shareholder advocates during 2012?
Well, I think Chevron and the case in Ecuador, where there's an $18 billion judgment against the company, it's really worth remembering that this is a human rights issue, that you're taking people who are living already in poverty and creating a very severely polluted environment. There are a lot of birth defects that people suffer, a lot of cancers, people dying. And so this is not just a matter of money. That's a human rights issue. And that was brought to Chevron repeatedly this year. That issue was brought up. And 30% of shareholders supported resolutions that focused on this. That's more than $50 billion in shareholder value, who are standing up and saying to Chevron, you know, we are mismanaging this issue, and it's about time that we dealt with it. And so we're hopeful that that issue will be dealt with, and that some sort of agreement will be reached, and that somehow the people will benefit from that down there in Ecuador. So Chevron, I sometimes say, is to human rights what ExxonMobil is to climate change. Chevron is really the worst actor on human rights issues, and so some of the focus of the human rights movement has really gone toward Chevron in the last couple of years.
And an additional thing I want to highlight that shows how the company is addressing this issue and approaching it is that under oath, they have said, quote, that this issue of the settlement is a problem that threatens our company, unquote. And in contrast to that, in legal filings at the Securities and Exchange Commission, they have reported, in essence, that it's nothing to worry about at all. So either they're lying in one case or they're lying in another. And in either way, they are on the record in a forum that is either under oath or where there are perjury implications for this sort of misrepresentation. It's just extraordinary.
Well, you've alluded a bit to this earlier, but would you like to report on shareholder advocacy efforts in regard to companies in the Northwest?
Yeah, we mentioned, you know, we've asked Nike to adopt best practices around transparency of political activity, and actually been surprised at the stonewalling that we've gotten from the company, and they've really made some fairly outlandish arguments in front of the SEC, really so silly that they should sort of be embarrassed. And this is not just me saying it, this is others within the field who have reviewed the materials and lawyers who say, you know, this is goofy.
Grasping at straws. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that's been interesting. Again, we look forward to the annual meeting. We look forward to a strong vote, and we look forward to movement on this. But the company, at least initially, has not responded very well. Amazon, as we mentioned, has taken some steps. They're ending their relationship with Alec was a good step. They still have a long way to go. There's an index that rates companies on their behavior around political transparency. And in 2011, Amazon scored a 0 out of 100. They've made a couple of changes, so they're probably off the zero mark for 2012. But we have a ways to go. And we know that there are a lot of people working for Amazon here. Amazon is an excellent employer. And we know that those people want to feel that they're working for a company that really is a responsible citizen and is responsible to stakeholders as well as employees. And so we anticipate that inside pressure at Amazon will also make a difference in moving the company toward responsible practices across the board.
And that's in contrast, of course, to Starbucks and Microsoft, both of whom adopted full disclosure policies, very, very effective and industry-leading ones. Boeing continues to be a laggard. To still harken back to that famous quote, a moment of rare candor when the associate treasurer said that the company just didn't have the stomach for this kind of disclosure. But Plum Creek has done good things in relation to vote counting and fair and democratic vote counting. And this is a whole other issue that Newground is starting to open up, and we're creating some traction and seeing some success in this arena. And Larry was at the Expeditors and PACCAR annual meetings. What happened there?
In both cases, shareholders, these were straight-up corporate governance issues. Expeditors, for instance, has a long-term, hard-charging board chair and CEO. And there was a proposal simply that for the future, the company look at separating those functions and not saying that right now with this guy, because he's a guy who's really built the company. But that got very substantial in the high 30s% support from Expeditors shareholders. So I think there could be some traction there as well.
In your view, what have been the most significant shareholder votes during the 2012 proxy season?
Well, I mean, I think that the most important vote is the one that people see and recognize and begin to understand that their vote counts. And that's what we're seeing is a lot more of that, where people understand that if they participate, they can be part of real change in corporate America. And so to me, that's the significance this year, is that people are recognizing that their vote counts. And so more than any particular vote at any particular company, that's the big story for 2012, I think.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, that there is hope. I mean, we've come through that 2007 to 2009 downturn, and we're still having tremendous economic problems. We see clouds on the horizon in Europe and from a variety of other arenas. And sometimes it seems the issues in the field of investing just seems so large that people maybe become despairing or feel like, what can one voice do? Well, one voice can have a big impact and has had a huge impact. As Larry alluded, several of the major beneficial outcomes that we've had with companies that have globally reduced pesticide use, have saved the Okefenokee National Wildlife Refuge from strip mining, things like this, came from shareholders who had very small amounts of shares, numbers of shares. And so there is hope. We can have an impact, and we are having an effect, and together we can make change. But it's coming together to do it is the key.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
It's terrific, as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have just been listening to Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. For more information, check on the web at www.newground.net. So again, newground.net. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.